love everybody. Where is Danny and Julie? There's Julie. Where's Danny? There's Danny. Okay. All right. James, are you batting for Kelly today?
Yeah, you have James Ehrman on the line from Kimley Horn. I believe I'm filling in for Kelly today. I think he's had some computer malfunctions. So okay. I will be representing anything that you need question-wise today.
Perfect. Great. All right. Well, let's go get started. Michael is gonna start the video. So we can start the recording. Okay, greetings everybody. It looks like we have great turnout. I appreciate it. A couple folks could not make it today, and a couple folks may be joining us. But I appreciate everything you've done to attend today. And this agenda probably, we've talked about having these meetings for an hour and a half. I suspect we could be done before that today, but we'll just see how it goes. So I'm going to call the Stakeholders UDO Steering Committee meeting of November 19th order. And I'm going to ask Julie to just quickly review the minutes. Any comments on the minutes, Julie?
No, I think there's a comprehensive overview of what we talked about and what we were expecting from next steps. We've hit those next steps, which was just basically trying to solidify the schedule. And how are we going to set up the meeting flow? I think we've done that. And so that was just the basic overall. We've talked about some of those questions. As we go through the review of what has changed and how we answer these questions, it's good to just review this and remember what happened at the last meeting. And that's about it.
Great. Thanks, Julie. Does anybody have any questions about the minutes as they read through them, or are we good with them as they are today?
I'm pretty good with everything. I've gone through them, and I didn't see any discrepancies.
Yeah, Kelly, I know last meeting we talked about making them public on the website. Are we still going to do that so everybody can see everything?
Good segue into the next item, the project website. So, Michael, why don't you talk about what you're doing with that a little bit, and Julie?
Sure, I'll start off. So we developed a project website to kind of keep the public and ourselves just up to date on what's happening. And you can see that link there. It's under the If you go to our homepage, the town of Rollsville, and then under the planning department, you'll see a what's new plans in progress page. And really this highlights both the UDO project, our rewrite project that we're all involved in here, and then also another project that Kimley Horn is working with us on. And that's to update our community transportation plan. So you'll see updates for both of these projects. We are posting newsletters. Kimley Horn provides newsletters to kind of describe what the work is currently and where we're going. And anytime we have a meeting with this steering committee, these meeting minutes get posted, and we will post an audio recording as well for the public to kind of, you know, if anybody's interested that wants to know what we've been talking about during this process. So that's it in a nutshell. Again, just anything and everything kind of that has to do with the UDO project to provide updates, and then also with the community transportation plan. And I don't know if you want to add anything else, Julie, or.
I would like to add that we'll be posting the minutes after you guys have a chance to review them to make sure there are no changes. So we'll be posting the meeting agenda packet and the audio recording of the meeting, and then waiting until the next meeting to make sure that you can review those minutes to make sure that they represent what we need, what happened at the meeting, and that we have no needed changes or necessary changes to make those meeting minutes accurate. And then we'll post them on the website.
That answer your question, Mayor? Okay, good. And we're treating that whole website page like a vault. So essentially anything and everything, we try and make sense in order of it, but we keep it in there so that not only public, but we all can go back there too and revisit as we go along also.
Kelly, I have a quick question if you don't mind.
Uh-huh, Derek.
Hey, so with the minutes in the time period between our meetings, are they going to be still posted online but noted as unapproved? Or are they going to not be available at all until we review and approve?
I don't know if I have a preference necessarily. It's really a technicality. I mean, Julie, can you turn around the minutes in a timely fashion?
We can probably do it quicker than the next month's meeting. We will have the agenda packet and the audio recording posted. I don't know if we put them as draft on the site. Yeah. It might be better to just throw the official ones up. That way people don't get confused on which version they've reviewed. But that can come from what the steering committee wants. And it usually takes us about a week and a half to get the minutes done and finalized and ready to go. So we can probably have them at the halfway point between now and the next meeting.
I'd love
it. I have no preference. I just know in other committees I've served on that had been brought up, so I just figured I'd bring it up in case anybody had any particular perspective, but I do not. So I'm okay with waiting until they're approved.
Let's do that for now, and then if we have a need, we can always post them next time, and we can come back and talk about it. But duly noted, and let's keep with our current process, if that's all right, Derek. So thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah,
we'll see if it's anything that we want to continue to pursue or not. Okay. So I'm going to go on to item 4, review of meeting schedule. And Julie, thank you for herding the cats and coming up with a consensus on date. We landed on third Thursday at noon. I think there was one that said that was probably a non-negotiable. Is that right, Julie?
Yes, Davian is not able to meet exactly at noon, but he can come in a little bit late, and he will be joining us today a little bit late as well. He sent me an email. He's going to be about 30 minutes or so late, so he's still going to be able to participate. And if there are any conflicts that come up with this, as always, you can send your comments to me, and I'll make sure they get incorporated into the steering committee comments as a whole. That way we have those points to address and we have your concerns addressed, because we would still like your participation, even if you do happen to miss one of these meetings due to a scheduling conflict.
Julie, have you done a comprehensive, if you have, I apologize, but have you done a comprehensive meeting invite with all these dates to everybody yet?
Yes, I have.
Great. Okay, good. Anybody have any comments about the date, or are we good to go and keep on with these for now?
Good to go for me.
Okay. Jackie responds, seeing no other comments. Let's move on then. Item five, review of section 6.5 and 6.6. So we had hoped that, and we hope to continue, that we talked about these meetings, we would have sections coming to you. And the first half of the meeting, we would review previous sections like we did. We're going to do now, which is section 6.5, 6.6. You've seen these. We've talked about them. I'm going to have Danny and Julie review them in what context, and James of what you've talked about and what they say now. And we would hope that we can move on from those sections each meeting. And then, and we didn't get it done this meeting, but there would be a second half of this meeting, which would be readings of new sections, fresh sections, and that we would spend limited time on the old sections just to verify that we've captured everything. And if we need to come back, rediscuss, and then get in some depth on the new. So next meeting, we'll bring back some new sections for you. We're not going to have any new sections today. We just were unable to meet that schedule, primarily based upon item 6, which we'll talk a little bit on our agenda and the time we've been spending on that. But for purposes of moving on this meeting today, Danny, why don't you and Julie start reviewing of section 6.5, 6.6, and what we've done and the consultant has done with those based upon the last meeting.
Kelly.
Yes, Jackie.
Kelly, before we get that, any changes, additions, deletions, or whatever that will be made, when it comes back to us, I would love to see those highlighted for us so we don't have to search. You know, if we delete something, let it still be there, but struck through. If we add something or change something, let it be highlighted so it'll be easier for us and quicker for us.
Duly noted. Okay. Any other comments before we jump into the sections?
I just want to say also that I did ask for the same thing for our planning board meetings. So if Julie and Danny can remember that question and do that.
Right. Good. Okay, Danny, take it over.
Well, Julie, can you go ahead and start kind of summarizing the changes that the committee requests, the stakeholders group requested, and what the consultant and everything we got coming back?
Yeah, so for fences and walls, one of the things that we had talked about were the materials, making sure that what we said, we said what we wanted and prohibited what we didn't want and made it a little bit more clear in the standards. We asked about undergrounding for fences, such as the electrical fences and how they applied. We asked about taking into account the fences that were not going to be part of a subdivision or development that wouldn't be controlled by an HOA, such as commercial and industrial fencing in residential areas that are already on the ground, but not necessarily part of a development, such as, you know, the houses on Main Street or anything like that, that wouldn't really be coming in after this, and how they would comply. And some of the larger lots out in the ETJ where those larger lots may want fencing in the front yard. So we started looking at those items for review, and let me switch views here. So in the section for 6.5, we had changed some things. To mark where under materials we removed similar materials, and we just put all other materials are prohibited. We changed from wrought iron to allowed aluminum, and aluminum materials that look like wrought iron when utilized. We changed some of the language for how the height would be determined, height from the finished grade. And we changed.
Hey, Julie.
Yes, sure.
Can I ask a moment? So Michael's driving the ship.
Okay.
You're doing the verbal.
Yep.
How do we track what you're saying?
Okay.
You need to get Michael to slide to sections to what you're referencing.
Yeah. Let me. I'll slow down a little bit as I'm talking through. And so yes, go down one more page because I've already hit on the wrought iron aluminum, and here at height, in section 4 A, we had talked about where this was going to be. So it is going to be at finished grade.
Can you reference which one now, please?
Height 4 versus A.
Okay, the first sentence there.
We had discussions about, you know, where this is going to be. You know, 8 feet in height, it is going to be from the finished grade. The maximum height in the fence or wall under B, where fences and berms are not permitted in front setbacks unless a subdivision fence or wall is permitted in a site plan for subdivision. So that calls out that it's a subdivision, not a not something that is a single lot in like either the ETJ or in another area that is not part of the subdivision. Under D, the height requirements for the berms are called out in the specific standards for the berm section later on. And that's the major change for section, for the height section. Colors, we had seen before, we didn't make any changes to the location. If you keep on scrolling down, Michael, to section E, we talked about the encroachments into easements and added a clarifying statement for the easements that the landowner, if it does encroach into a town-owned easement, that the landowner is going to be responsible for the repair or replacement if anything happens to the fence during from any damage that might occur while the town or the city or Raleigh or whoever owns the easement is doing activities to enhance the easement. For setbacks under number 7, there was a conflict before. So we had changed the language a little bit to take out that conflict, added a clarifying statement that they're exempt from the setback requirements. And that, because currently under the current UDO, the fences, especially corner lots, have an additional setback. And so this is exempting all of them, including the corner lots, from that additional setback for fences so that they can go up to the property line. We, for landscaping under number 9, we talked about where that feet and height should be and who, where the landscape area is and what that is going to be. So we came back with a recommended 5 feet from the right-of-way line, and under B, for the, we clarified the language here for subdivision walls and for private residences. So the language is a little bit different. And then another call out for the shrub plantings are gonna be for the, for later section 14.6 for the planting material. So you'll be seeing that section later. But that's where it's going to be referenced for what the plantings are going to be. So there is going to be some cross references here that we'll take into account as we continue doing the sections. Scrolling down to section F on prohibited fences and walls. This is where we talked a little bit about the electric fences and what about underground fences for pets. So we used a definition from 160D. We added a clarifier for that section. Under barbed wire fences, again, we used the 160D definitions for the barbed wire fences to help clarify where we're pulling those definitions from and what we're doing. There is some changes on the terminology for the specific berm standards in section G. So what we're calling required setbacks, it used to say required yards. So we're keeping the terminology consistent now. So when we talk about a required yard, it's a required setback, so that we're keeping that consistent language throughout the documents and not interchanging planning terms. If you keep on scrolling down, we added a clarifier to the height so that there's a, when you put the fence on top of the barn, that the total height is from the maximum height of fences, so that you're not doing a barn and then adding the fence on top of the barn. So you're getting a 14 foot tall fence and barn, but that you're getting the barn and then the fence. And how we clarified how that maximum height is figured out for the drainage. We are keeping the undue pooling of water there so that it we have something to refer back for any code violations that come forward or any complaints that come forward. If somebody says that their neighbor's fence or their neighbor's berm is causing them drainage, so that we have something to refer back to. And that is the end of the changes for this section.
I think Jackie's suggestion is a good suggestion, so that we can see them in advance and you don't have to read them all to us. So.
Yeah,
we'll do that next time. Do we want to spend a moment, and those of you who have read or understood or looked at this, any comments on that section, fences, walls, and berms, before we move on to lighting? Okay, seeing none. Julie and Danny, take us through lighting.
All right, for lighting, most of the same kind of comments. So let me get here. And hang on just a second, I've got two screens going. And for lighting, we had talked about the color of the light being considered. We had talked about changing technologies and how we're going to be enforcing the lighting. We talked about the energy efficiency of lighting and solar renewable energy. We also talked about a little bit more about the solar farms and how solar is going to be played into this. And we're going to be putting the solar farms into a different section and not necessarily as part of the lighting. So what we came back with from that, some of the discussion, just to remind you of last time, some of the standards we won't be putting into the UDO, such as the color or the color of the light, because that changes very quickly with the technology, and we don't want to have to update the UDO every time. So what we're going to do is we put that basically that this we built standards that will hold up to changes with the changing of times and technology as time goes forward. So keeping that in mind as we move through some of the changes, what we did was we clarified the purpose and intent to include the protection of the night skies and to minimize or reduce the light pollution. We changed the applicability of the what is considered a minor and major site plan. Minor is 10% or less. I think it was 25% last time. The non-conforming lighting, we clarified under that major and minor approach to keep that consistent. We updated a little bit of the terminology under D for exemptions for security lighting. They're clarified with the crime prevention through the environmental design what is considered security lighting for those definitions. So we have something to fall back on. On the next page, under prohibited lighting, we used some of the current standards for the awning, for the flashing lights, and for the floodlights. And we did add the tube lighting and traffic control similar lighting to help with those clarifications and basically call out what is not considered anything under the C the whatever that was, the comprehensive, the crime prevention through environmental design, that one. So we called out a little bit more things that are going to be prohibited that wouldn't necessarily fall under those things for a normal lighting plan. We used and still maintain some of the current UDO standards for the certificates of occupancy under F, under the review of the lighting plan. We kept that the plan must be prepared by a licensed engineer. And then for the plan requirements and the illumination values.
One second.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Can you go back to the tube lighting and there was some other. So go to D for a second because maybe I missed something.
Okay.
Okay, so prohibited lighting.
So under D, the exemptions, the crime prevention through environmental design exemptions are what basically like floodlights or if the EMS have to set up, fire safety has to set up any type of rescue or anything like that, that those lights don't have to go through the lighting plan process. They don't have to be a certain wattage that anybody doing the security, like police searchlights, that kind of thing. These are exemptions from that. And so the crime prevention through environmental design, parking areas, floodlights, emergency lights, that kind of thing, they're going to be exempted from this, from the lighting plan. That way we can still have that life safety prevention going on. Okay, so that was the change.
Okay, so then when you go to E,
mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at some of this. This looks like more commercial type lighting.
Yes, and so tube lighting was added. That's the neon or the rope lighting on building exteriors, and that called out a little bit more of a. In other areas, we've got like the flashing lights, and we've got. The marquees, the scrolling marquees on how fast they can blink through that. That's on in the sign permits later. So tube lighting is the like the neon lighting that you would see. Sometimes people put the neon lighting around their windows. Mm-hmm. They have that colored lighting. And so the tube lighting we have added as a prohibited lighting.
But I don't understand why, because I know there are some spaces now that has tube lighting.
If you want to, and that's one of the things that we can discuss. If you would like that tube lighting, if you think that adds character that you're looking for in the town, if you think that's the design element that you would like to have, then we can discuss that. Typically neon lights are not allowed usually through a lighting plan, but if you would like to have those and have businesses have that opportunity.
Well, I'm wondering, because some businesses already have it, number one. And two, some of these some of the lightings that's referred to in here, like some people have an open sign that flashes. So that's a no-no according to this here.
Yes.
Okay, then I guess we'll talk about that a little further. Because just as an example, I don't have any of that, so I want to clear the air on that. But sometimes based on your location, people don't know if you're open or closed. Like over here, everybody sits in like the bottom of a bowl. So if you can't add something to attract people to see that you are open, it can block some of your business.
I think that's always been the case. But there are some signs, if you ride around town, there are some open signs that do flash.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we enforce it, I think that's always been in the case that, you know, you have the open sign just to say open and you don't flash it. But
right. We're not saying that the open sign isn't allowed. We're saying that the flashing and the moving, rotating, the flicker, those aren't allowed.
What you're saying, but I think that's for some businesses, it makes a difference.
Can I interject in here a second?
Sure. Please.
Let's talk about the old ordinance to the new one. Old ordinance has restrictions under our sign regulations dealing with flashing lights, floodlights, and all other things. So I think what they're attempting to do here is just under the general category of lighting, identifying the restrictions. Neon tube lighting has been done in many different ways, such as on exterior buildings to trim the doors, the windows, the eaves, the roof lines, I mean, all kinds of ways to draw attention to it. And the category you got to deal with, what's a sign and what's lighting? So I think this is trying to look at the distinction and then say, you cannot create lighting to the form of generating too much attraction to draw your eyes off of the traveling public. The biggest question on lighting is how it affects vehicles driving up down the road to get distracted or blinding them to where they take their eyes off the road and then hit something or hit somebody. So in our current code, any signs behind glass is exempt. And we haven't got to signs yet, but back to the flashing part of it, if it's flashing, we should go notify them, no, you cannot flash it. You can have the sign saying open. You can do an outline inside your glass of that neon, but you just can't put it on the outside, on the exterior.
Well, that was my next question, was if it was referring to interior, exterior. But now that you mentioned lights, and I'm sure we'll get to it with the signage, I'd like to know how that billboard doesn't fall into one of these categories, because that is very distracting.
You're talking about our billboard on the bypass?
Yes, but I know we haven't gotten there yet. But
that billboards are under sign regulations. They're correct. Not under lighting.
Under sign, I get it. That's what I was saying. So, but thank you for answering my question, interior versus exterior. Thank you.
And building on that question, the people that are already have signs in place, are they grandfathered in from any changes we make?
That goes into our non-conforming section that we'll discuss later, but that's a good question.
Okay.
But yeah, there will be a specific section here dealing with non-conformities.
Yeah, because you know that's going to be asked. Okay, thank you.
And can I ask one other point of clarification? Is there more of a concern of the flashing light, since we're talking about lights and not signs? Are we more concerned about that at a time at point where the sun is not out? Because obviously the effectiveness of a flashing light is greatly diminished in the middle of broad daylight. So would there be any kind of interest in making a regulation that this is restricted for, you know, sunset to sunrise time frames?
The answer is no. Traditionally, okay. If you're going to prevent flashing light, you're not going to get to a question of interpretation or even saying sunrise to sunset. It's not allowed, and during the day, it is allowed. It's normally not that case.
Okay.
It is drawing, attracting your visibility as a traveling public, which is what you're doing. As cars are going by, you're trying to draw their attention. The intensity to do that can cause potential accidents or safety question. That's the reason why traditionally you have the prohibition. Same thing goes with having the big floodlights to light up the sky, strobing around. That's prohibited, which you don't see anymore, thank goodness.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Danny and Julie, let me ask, I have two questions while we're on all this. Michael, if you scroll up to D1. So D1, most popular thing out there right now is patio lights, party lights on patios. Is this saying those are allowed in residential neighborhoods?
It's allowed for single family and two family.
What? Okay, so if I live in an apartment and have a patio, I'm not allowed to put up patio lights?
That's the exemption. When it says exempt from the standards, meaning that it does not apply.
It's allowed. But if we have an apartment, and there's a patio and they put up party lights, they're not allowed. What's a two-family dwelling?
A duplex.
Uh-huh. All right, and that probably needs to be amended to townhomes and condos and apartments.
Subject to the terminology we use when we get to that category.
Or just multifamily.
Or just leave off residentialized as part of the site plan.
Yeah.
And
you're getting to a good question, Kelly. You hit something that it's not uncommon that they'll go and get these string patio lights and put them on the rails of a of a deck or an opening area. When you, particularly when you have a nice little outdoors patio space to the apartments and you're on the third floor.
Well, and then even
and some of that has to do also with the property management.
Right.
But the question is, is it a sign or is it a violation? And we'll have to bring that, see if we can get some clarity on it.
And then also just make sure that patio lights are allowed in on commercial areas too, where for ambiance, outdoor seating and such. It's real popular.
Well, that should be technically part of their lighting plan.
Okay. All right.
That should be part of their lighting plan. Even if you want to do a string of lights over outdoor space under pergola or something like that, that should be all part of the overall lighting.
I suspect 90% of them won't be, because it'll happen after the owner moves in. The business moves in.
But you also have to deal with electrical wiring too for this commercial, because those lights have to have inspections and have a permit because it's a commercial building.
Okay. I want to think about that one. And then D4, special events. Make sure we can have our grand opening spotlights. Is that allowed there? Or is that going to be under the
sign? Spotlights? Board? You mean the floodlights? I mean, spotlight in the sky?
Yeah, for when we have a grand opening or two.
Nope. No.
Huh?
No.
Why no that? What?
Well, there you get into a different question. Are you going to allow a business to go in and put a big floodlight that everybody can see for 20 miles away?
Yes. For grand openings.
Well, it's not that. Then we go back to, we got to see what the definition of a special event is.
Yeah.
Okay. It would be like, would it be based on like duration, like for how long?
Yep. Yep. You never want to prohibit a fun time at grand opening. You want to make a right, but you want to make sure they have. I've been through this in my life before, and the best thing you want to make sure is allow them to have a moment to do some drawing attention and have a good special opening. And I don't think it's proper to disallow, and that's my opinion.
I agree with Kelly.
I think spotlights are fun, and properly done on the opening night of something that's consistent with the environment of
something. Now, that, to be honest with you, Kelly, that's a change of our current ordinance to allow spotlights.
Okay. I'm going to note it.
Because you're not, a spotlight is also we're talking about lighting here, but a spotlight is a motion activated attention to device, and that's prohibited.
Right. Okay. Let's, if the group's ready, if group's okay with that, I'd like to work through that one a little bit more. I'm all about fun, and I think we should have.
Should we put in some language in there that just says limited to special events and holidays? I get where Danny is going. You don't want to have this year round or days around. Yeah. It's just, even if it's just for a one time use, just maybe put some sort of limitation in there just for that purpose. I do see where Mr. Johnson is going, and I do see your point as well. So
I'm going to advocate pretty hard that we have the ability to allow some limited use for grand openings or such, because I think it's a really important kind of celebration. And I may be wrong, and I'm going to be.
I agree with you.
I understand, and it's a good point. I was going to say, you also have to get into the question of what constitutes what's a sign to attract people.
Yes.
Versus lighting.
And that's
the principle here is lighting, but the lighting is not supposed to be disruptive,
right?
Not to be attracting.
That's right.
I mean, it lights up things. It lights up a parking lot and may light up around a building.
Right.
For security purposes, but it's not for the purpose to draw you to that. Because if you draw attention, that gets into question of advertisement.
That's right. So my experience is, typically that exemption is spelled out in the sign code. So I just don't want to have this be conflictive with when we get to that point, the sign code. And I think that gets to Michelle's point, is there's going to have to be, we're going to come back to this a little bit, make sure we don't have any conflicts in this with our sign code ultimately when we get into those items. So,
Well, professional events, you're talking about holidays, displays, but when you go and have a fireworks display or you do a pumpkin patch out here and you want to light it up at night so people can pick out their pumpkins, that's the lighting we're talking about as a special event.
Okay. All right.
Or same thing goes with Christmas trees.
Okay.
Lighting up an area so you can see the Christmas tree. That and holiday displays is obviously your traditional Christmas and Halloween and other things you do for holidays.
Okay. Well, I just want to make a note that I'll keep my eye out for celebratory spotlights as we go along.
Thank you, Kelly. All right, move along.
Okay, where were we? Tube lighting. All right, so did we have any other comments on tube lighting for building exteriors?
No, my question when I said tube, I was referring to all of them, like the awning, the flashing. But okay. I just remember tubes didn't, that was the last one I seen on the screen. So, but I was basically, you answered it, so we can move on.
All right, so moving down, as we go through page 3, there wasn't any changes. The plan requirements are still there. The illumination values we've kept, as we had talked about earlier, about keeping them at a level where the UDO will apply with the changing technologies as we keep scrolling down into page 4 for the general standards. We added a few design standards. Basically from the UDO standards on what the lighting fixtures, how they operate, what they're going to be like, so the cutoff fixtures, canopy lighting will be designed to be recessed. That's from the current code. We talk about like fixtures on top of a parking garage. We don't have a parking garage yet. So this is one of those things that will be, you know, one of the things that we talk about in the future when we get a parking garage. So the light fixtures on top of the parking garage may not exceed the 15 feet in height, must be shielded. And lighting for permitted rooftops, walkways, bikeways. This is the general language that you saw in the past. And then we updated the light fixtures height based on comments from the steering committee to be 30 feet instead of 35 in height to help that pedestrian scale. So we changed the graphic on the next page. So that you can see that is now a maximum 30 foot height instead of 35. We talked about the lighting intensity standards under section H, and we kept most of the current standards from our intensities. We simplified the table in our current code and then made it to match this stylistic, I don't know what the word I'm trying to think of here, but to match the style of the UDO. So we put that chart in, prettied it up a little bit, but kept the same standards. And then the external building lighting, we've added a little bit for spillover light down at the bottom, building facade and accent lighting. That's number 6. Where we talk about that spillover lighting for the light fixtures to make sure that it's shielded so that it's on the building facade and that the spillover light is negligible. In the parking area lighting standards, again, we changed that from 35 feet to 30 feet to help with the scalability. And then the graphic on the next page has been updated to show 30 feet in height to help with that scalability. Under L for athletic lighting standards, for the athletic standards, we clarified this a little bit so that it's all sports fields and areas, so that it include before it said hard courts. So this is going to be basically all athletic field lighting standards to help keep that consistent across the board. And for gas station lighting, we kept the current language, we removed the permissive language and changed it to shall, and we removed the material requirements because it was too limiting. So we put that the lighting levels shall be no greater than the 12-foot candles at the edge of the canopy, which is part of the current UDO and seems to reflect the comments that we had talked about last time about getting that area lit underneath the canopy, but containing the spillover. And that is the end of the lighting section.
James or Danny, you have call-outs for two different documents in here, the crime under the exemptions and then the engineers for the athletic fields. Are those standard? I can pick up a UDO or a zoning code in anywhere North America and know, if I was a vendor, know those standards?
Dealing with the athletic field standards is referenced there, the Illuminated Engineering Society of North America, that is a national standard. I'm not familiar with the other one. James or Julie, can you answer
yeah,
that one?
For the record, James Zerman, Kimberly Horn. These standards for the CPTD are kind of some newer standards that we're seeing being developed and referenced in a lot of the newer UDOs across the country. So while it may not be as established, it is something that we're seeing more and more of. And if you'd like to see more information just kind of on how they approach general techniques and design, we can certainly provide that to you, but that is something that internally our engineers are aware of. And I think it is quickly becoming a best practice throughout the country on that.
Right, but and the question would be, what Kelly was raising, was that something easily found when they see that label? Is it something commonly found or is it just unique and still in development?
No, it should be commonly found.
So you can find it through Google?
You should be able to find it right on Google and bring it up, and all okay. of those different design principles should be there.
All right.
If it is something that is a little unfamiliar or there is difficulty in finding those, obviously we can amend it, but this is something that we've been often utilizing.
I just think we'll have to have a record of what that is, to where to get that source, if we're referencing something outside, to be able to share that information when we get inquiries. That's a later thing. That's an administration thing.
I have a quick question. Well, I'm not sure if it's quick, so I do apologize. But on page, I don't know, it was a page that said what uses for the lights and the maximum illumination. Page 7.
Foot candles table.
Yes, okay. So what does it currently say for single family homes, two family residential?
Well, if you'd like, we'll do a comparison to the current code. I don't have to look it up. But normally that, what this is doing is actually saying homes. I don't know if we want to do that or not. But you're talking about multifamily or street lighting, something like that, different provisions. We usually, the lighting we have in the current code focuses mainly on commercial, industrial, and institutional uses, but not subdivisions. And okay. Sometimes it would apply for apartments if you had an apartment complex with a parking lot.
Okay, so you don't know what it is for? There's nothing written for private residence? For single family?
Yeah, you got a question. I got to look it up.
Because I just want to know if it's changed and if it changed from what to from what the change was to what it is now. Because I just remember, I wish Jeff was here. I just remember there was a conversation we had in the villages about how much, because what is it? A foot candle, is that how much the light radiates beyond the light?
That's a measurement of brightness of the light on the surface that it reflects from. And it varies as you move away from the source.
Mm-hmm.
If you're directly under its higher concentration, as you move away from it, it decreases.
It decreases, but it decreases out a certain amount of, I don't know if it's square feet or what have you.
It's foot candles.
Because if you
it's the terminology of lighting.
I'm just trying to figure out the kind of, I can't really recall the entire conversation, but it has something to do with either more light poles to cascade one light for safety or fewer poles at a higher density in terms of illumination, I guess. And I'm just wondering what the
difference. You're talking about streetlights, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I don't think this gets into streetlights, does it, Danny?
No, because that's okay. Local.
Okay, sorry.
But we do have a standard for apartment complexes, residential, but we do not have, in the current code, a provision for single family. So that is new.
How does that work? I mean, it means exempted single family, two family residential from the streets. Then we have maximum illumination from property line. So if they have a light out there somewhere, they can't have the foot candles beyond that on their, if it's a private light.
Yeah, that does imply to be private lights. James, do you want to explain where that came from?
Yeah, and just to clarify, what particular section are we discussing?
We are dealing with page 7, okay. Table 6.6, under the category of single family, two family residential with a 1.0 foot candle, maximum illumination at the property line.
Okay, yes, I do see that. Let's see.
And for the record, multifamily residential on here is 1.5 foot candles. And on the old code, it is point. Six.
So it gives six you a, this one higher. Gives you radius. Okay.
So this is very low lighting. This residential complexes, commercial and in general, are 0.6. And it's the only reference for apartments.
Okay, so I understand what this lighting is. So basically, if it's a single family house, and say you have like a decorative pole on your property, is this the amount of lighting that's supposed to be able to cascade from just your from your property line to back to your house?
Is the casting at the property line. When you go to the property line, that's the level of brightness.
Okay.
It is not at the source. It's at the property lines. Now, if you got a 10-foot separation with the property line down the middle, when you got a 5-foot side yard, then that's going to, you know, you got a light on the building. That could be, depends on what kind of intensity you put on that, you know, how much light that thing casts. If you get one of these high, bright LED lights, yeah, that could be an issue. I'm a little cautious on right now looking at this, but you raised a good question.
I was gonna bring that up because you hear some of those nightmare stories every now and then about how, you know, these houses being so close together can have someone, you know, citing these ordinances and saying, oh, well, you know, my light cast more than, you know, 1.0, you know, foot candles, and you're 5 feet away, but in the front of the house, it's not a big deal because you're, you know, 20, 30 feet from the curb. So yeah, that's an interesting number. I wish I had a visual of understanding just exactly what 1.0 foot candles looks like.
It's not very bright, I can tell you that. I would tell you that I think this could run into, I hate to say this, but when you have property owners that don't agree with each other.
Right.
Well, you don't want to get in the middle of a squabble over a foot candle of the brightness of their porch light or their side door light to going out their door or floodlight they have on the corner of the house. I think that we might need to take that one off.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, or make it so ridiculously low that you know a flashlight would be in violation of it.
I don't want to do that. Don't make it so ridiculously low. I'd rather we just not get into individual single family, two family lighting.
Okay, but Danny, if you don't get into it and if someone puts like a light on there that can light up an entire neighborhood, what do you then?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I think too, Danny. If we don't have this, then we need some type of nuisance lighting, something that just like noise, if there's a nuisance in the lighting, we can handle it. So,
is this something, sorry, Ronnie. Is this something that the HOA takes care of, or are we talking about communities that, like mine, that doesn't have an HOA? That, in other words, are we taking on more than we need to take on here with the lighting? But good points, because we do. I like the nuisance approach.
And the answer to the question, when we call it a nuisance, that's not necessarily in this section.
No,
because then you got to go into the town code on dealing with public nuisances and what constitutes a public nuisance. It's usually health, safety, and environmental.
Well, I know we have noise in there, Danny. So, you know.
Yeah, that's technically environmental.
Driving
yeah.
your neighbor crazy is a health issue.
So I understand. But I think my point in this is that we're putting single family and two family residential with a specific maximum illumination at the property line. And we have thousands and thousands of homes in Roseville. Now we're getting into a very difficult, complex situation to go check everybody's lights.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking as well. Let the HOA on the smaller scale deal with those things, but also, and then we're starting to get into, as someone just pointed out, squabble between neighbors. Now we're getting into court and legal. So that's above my pay grade. So I don't think we should get into those things really, but
I want to agree with you on that, Davian, because sometimes, and I know as being a president of our HOA,
yeah,
we did not get satisfaction from the HOA. They refer to the town.
They refer to the town. Aha. Okay. Yeah, we're getting into a lot of specialties, and one of them is legal and regulatory and compliances, and that could be treacherous territory. A lot to handle, I think.
And let me throw one other quick question. There is a state statute that you can, and it may be interpreted with us setting the foot candles on light fixtures or with the lights they cast at the property line into the category of architectural regulations. We cannot regulate architectural regulations under the new laws and recent enactment previously for single family and two family residential, unless it is a voluntary offer from the developer in this case that eventually goes into covenants, that goes into site criteria or something like that. But it has to be a voluntary offer. So you can't go carte blanche, apply everybody a restriction that constitutes an architectural control.
Okay, so wait, I have a question. Because this UDO is so antiquated, the one that we're trying to change, I think at the time it was created, you didn't have all of these developments in place. All these communities weren't here. So I just think the town has to take a stand and not defer it to the state so that we won't have to push this off on the next entity to correct, because it's going to be an ongoing problem. And how the developers do not have to conform to something that's in the UDO, I just need a little more explanation on that. Because I don't feel you're dictating, but you are letting them know what's not, what's required and what is not required on a town level.
Let me say one thing, because I've got to leave this meeting to go to another meeting. Danny has already stated that 1.0 is very dim. I think we need something in the UDO. I also believe that typically your HOAs have more restrictive rules than the town UDO stipulations. So we need to consider that as we move forward. But this does need some further investigation, and we need some opinions on it before we move forward on this. And I apologize, but I've got to get to another meeting.
Jackie, thank you. And go ahead. And that leads to my, Julie, I think we have a series of questions that have been raised today on a few items. And I would like to make sure that we duly note those in a minute. And then we come back and do our research on these and come back to them and clarify them at the next meeting. Because I don't think we're going to solve it today. And James, I think you need, and Danny and Julie need to kind of talk over these and make sure we got a good answer when we get back on it next week.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of good conversation about the single family in particular. So we'll have to kind of readdress that. And it sounds like maybe there are some mixed opinions internally just about whether or not it's a good thing to include, or maybe the number needs to be higher. You know, if there's any more clear direction from the board and the steering committee today on that, we'd love to clarify that moving forward.
James, I'm gonna take and say that let's try and make sure we understand what the number is and be able to explain it, and then we can see if we still recommend it and see if we hit the target the next week.
Okay, sounds great.
Is that okay with everybody?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so we're finished, right? We got through the whole thing.
Does anybody else have any questions besides Michelle online?
I am good right now. I'm waiting for the end.
Please go ahead.
I have a quick, just to add to what Michelle was saying. When I see as just a regular average person, FC foot candles and things like that, I don't know how that measures. And I think someone else mentioned also, what does that look like? So I know that's how we're measuring it right now, is just, what does that mean? I know what an inch is and what an inch looks like. I know what a foot looks like, but what does a foot candle look like? I think that's ultimately where my
it's going to be hard for you as a layman to understand foot candles,
right?
And unless you go and say that's bright, that's dim. I mean, that's just matter of opinion, you know. It's a matter right. of your perception.
Let me throw another suggestion.
Lighting Craig. Standard with the intensity of light.
Right.
That's Danny,
I want to interrupt you for a second, Danny. Yeah, I would just like to do an interim kind of education, Damien, to you and the group, and we'll send out something in a couple weeks that explains it further. So if you want to read on your time,
absolutely,
you have. So
that, and I can do some research as well.
Let's make that kind of an interim quick note, and in a couple weeks we'll get out some information to the rest group on what foot candles are, and so we can get more comfortable with it and decide if we like it or not. But I think that's a worthwhile topic to send out a little bit more information to the group in the interim, if we don't mind. There's got to be a layman's paper.
Yeah, because
I know for you and I to be able to read and understand too.
Yeah, because I understand what 3,000K luminous versus a 6,000, and I don't know if they're the same thing here. I know that's brightness or color.
Right.
I know how to measure that because I know what that looks like. But when we're talking about 1.0 FC versus a 5.0 FC, I can take a guess at what that is, but I don't know what that looks like.
Five times brighter.
It just gets brighter. How much brighter?
That'll be helpful to send out pictures. The shorter the difference of these lighting measurements deals with the source versus the output versus where it ends up actually making the light visible. And that's what Danny was saying about where it becomes reflective, like on the sidewalk. So it's a unit of measure taken from one of those three points. And that's what will be very helpful to see in some sort of a chart. So yeah, Kelly, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, pictures would help.
Okay.
When it gets into the enforcement of these lighting regulations, does the town have a tool for measuring foot candles if they get a complaint, or how is that done?
We would have to purchase a meter. We do not have one today.
Okay.
Oh, that's good to know in case you ever get pulled over for having illegal window tint in your car. That's good to know.
That's nothing to do with window tinting. It's just it's a foot candle. It's a light meter.
Yeah, well, a light meter is used to, never mind. A light meter is used to test the window tint in your vehicle. And I'm just making fun to lighten up.
I don't want to be doing that. Sorry.
Okay, so we're good, Kelly. That's it.
Well, I want to comment on Mike's question. Mike, I've worked in two large organizations before in my life, town organizations. Neither organization had a foot candle measuring also. We always had to, and there was one time we got in conflict and we actually brought in an expert to help us through the issue. It's a rarely used trainable tool that most municipalities, unless you're large, has somebody online that's certified and can test it. So, but it is a tool that is out there in case we need it. And when there's conflict, it is raise a question, how do we enforce it?
I also find it interesting that we're talking about, you know, foot candles at the property line, but yet a lot of what this is used for is so that cameras can see further. Okay. But yet we don't talk about how cameras can't cross the property line with videoing.
Okay, Brett, just throw another wrench in the conversation.
I know. Huh?
Okay. I think Michelle is urging moving towards closure. Anybody else have any questions?
No, I'm not. I just didn't know.
I know. I'm giving you a hard time.
I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
So I just want to make sure that our next meeting, December something, we'll have the scratch outs versus what the new thing is, and we'll have that planning board meeting as well.
Yes. Well, this one we'll probably have a quick touch up on this one. There won't be a whole lot of changes. Mm-hmm. And in the minutes, we'll reflect the questions and we'll make sure we address those. And we'll do an interim quick document of something we find, hopefully that explains foot candles and how to measure them and what they are, so we all understand it. Yes, Michelle, from here on out, when we re-review sections that we've already gone through and ask for modifications, we will then provide strikeouts and show you the changes so you can.
Cool. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. Real briefly, just so everybody is keeping track, and this is Mike and Davian's life a little bit. The next item is Town Center Zoning District Amendment Update. As we talked about last meeting, there is a section of this going live in the review process outside of this group already, and that's for the Town Center Zoning District. That is to meet kind of a pending development that is going on at Young and Main. And the Planning Board has taken two reviews of this text amendment, and it's coming back to you today in the packet, I think, and for your meeting Monday night. There is one big question still, planning board members, that you'll be asked to review further from the prospective developer from your effort that you did last meeting. So look at that for that in your packet. And then they will probably be attending your planning board meeting Monday night to make their case. But that one is if the planning board gets to a point where they can make a recommendation Monday night, and that's kind of staff's hope, it would be sent to the town board for December to review, and then potentially public hearing in January. This group, we won't spend any time on that necessarily. So if you're interested and you're not on the planning board, look at the planning board packet come this afternoon. That's going to go out. And if you are interested, you can get caught up on it. But that one is going to be separate and distinct from this process. So for purposes of discussion and such, does anybody else have anything good for the order for today's meeting? Okay, so I think we got it all. Julie, do you have anything clarifying that you want to raise up, or did you... while you were going through everything, did you take good notes?
While I was speaking, I took 2 pages of notes. So I think we're good. Plus, this has been recorded for me to go back through later. So we should be good. And just so everybody knows that there is a chat box associated with this, and Derek has sent out some JPEGs helping to explain foot candles and
lumen.
I think is that
it's two examples of just kind of illustrating, you know, what the difference is between a lumen and a foot candle. And the lumen is how bright something is at the source, and the foot candle is the measurement of how much light is basically displayed on a surface 1 foot away. And that's why it becomes relevant in this kind of a conversation of property, because for the most part, you don't care how bright something is sitting on the house, because that's their, within their imaginary lines of their property, that's their property. It's what happens at the very edge of their property that manages that a town would be most worried about. And that's where that property line and the measure of what the light looks like on the ground at the property line is why their use of foot candle is popular in this respect. Because we want to know how much light it is when I'm standing at the sidewalk versus when I'm standing, you know, right in front of my door so I can see the face of the person knocking at it.
Right. So Derek and Julie, if you make sure that you can get that document, Julie, from Derek, and then if it's something we want to put the best group, we'll do that.
Yes, I've downloaded them. I just wanted to call it out to make sure that everybody knew there was a chat feature and that there had been something sent for their review. We'll make sure that these JPEGs also get put into the minutes so that they're reflected, because with it being in the chat version, I don't know if it will get into the video version of the recording of the meeting. So we'll make sure that these pictures are included in the minutes.
Thank you.
All right, Davian, Brad, Tim, Andy, thanks for tuning in today. Board and Mike and such, we appreciate all your time. And everybody have a great Thanksgiving if we don't talk or see you before then. And then we'll see you in about 1 month.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kel.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.